All right. Well, we are on Welcome to Elevate today. I'm with a very special guest who's been suggested to be on this podcast. So here we are with my friend. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name is Carrie Berrio.
Yes, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So this is my first podcast with someone that I genuinely met today. And what's really cool about that is two people suggested you pretty much. So Victor Jones, who is my friend and mentor's mentor. So mm-hmm. I know so much about him. And then my cousin. And they're both hyping you up. And I was like,
I love that. Yeah. Vic is truly one of my best friends. He's my person, my people. So mm-hmm. I love that.
Isn't that cool though? How the worlds collide. Because my mentor, Daniel, Victor is Daniel's mentor. It's like, it's for connected.
It's full circle. And yeah. I love that in life sometimes, you never know who knows who. And then eventually it just kind of catches up to you. And the people always cross your path when they are meant to cross your path. And I really enjoy that. When you sit with it, it's like, oh, no, I didn't know this person. And then it's, oh, wow, this is a great time in my life to be doing this or talking to this person. Yes. Or I'm in a funk and the right person directs you to the right mentor to kind of help you through that.
For sure.
I love those idiosyncrasies.
And that's what I was telling them. I was like, I want to have more strong and empowered women that can just talk about their story and how their life created their career and stuff like that. But it's just girls are a little bit more shy sometimes or uncomfortable in front of a camera or even telling their story. And that's when my cousin was like, I have someone for you. And that's why it was perfect. Here we are, great. 2 weeks later or something.
I love that. I got your message. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One, it's humbling. To me, it's very humbling that people say that. And in my journey and even with my mentors, a lot of people say, you never know who you're inspiring. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, especially, and I think women do this a lot, it's not me, or no, I'm not, or I'm not seeing that engagement. So people aren't hearing my message. And then you get something like this and it's like, oh, okay. Wonderful. I would love to. I'm honored.
Yeah. It's super cool. When I saw your profile, I was yes. Oh my gosh, she's on top of it. And then knowing your story, I'm like, dang, you created a really great life from the life that you lived.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk about how your life created the career that you have now with Enhikement?
Yeah. So I think that, Enhikement really came out of years of bad decisions and trying to get healthy and trying to find myself. And mm-hmm. I had to basically fail and struggle and hit rock bottom and do all the unhealthy things, thinking I was being healthy, to find what true health is and understanding where that comes from and knowing that you need to tackle what's going on up here and in here mm-hmm. first.
Yeah.
And all the other things are going to trickle down and follow. And I found that calmness and that health in nature and in hiking and what that brings mm-hmm. to the table for people. And then I wanted to correlate that with women. So it's not that I don't want men to go out and hike. It's just I'm a female. I was a young mom. Mm-hmm. I know all the struggles that came from that come with motherhood. So I can relate to that and be able to speak more on that. And I want women to feel empowered to take control of themselves and take mm-hmm. control of their health and not get lost in people-pleasing and feeling shamed and feeling like I have to take care of my children so I can't take care of myself. And mm-hmm. how do we piece all those together but also feel calm and centered? Mm-hmm. And I mean, people could tell me it, but I'm not going to believe them if they say they went for a walk and they don't feel better, or they went for a hike and they don't feel calmer. I would really challenge that if someone said that to me. And that's mm-hmm. where Enhikement came from. Go out and hike. Go out and be in nature. Let's really get you an understanding of how you eat and what you think and start to become fully healthy and go from there. Because I think a lot of times the idea of being healthy sounds great, But then the work to become healthy is where everybody kind of gets stuck. It's hard.
Oh, yeah.
It is hard to pick yourself back up. It's hard to rewire bad habits. And so where do we start? And I think being in nature and being grounded in that spirituality helps you to create like a calm level to then step into the uncomfortableness that comes with growth and health and healing.
Dang. That's so amazing that you created that.
Yeah, thank you.
And so during these hikes, do you incorporate like meditation?
We do. So every hike that I do, either halfway through or towards the end, we do a meditation practice or we do a gratitude. Like this weekend is my first ever couples one. And wow. What I'm going to have each couple do is you're going to speak gratitude to each other. Like place your hand on your partner's heart. And I want you to look at them and tell them what you are grateful for to them. Because sometimes, especially in relationships, we're so busy with our day to day and we do feel gratitude and we do appreciate our person. But like, do you tell them? Like, do you just sit down and look at them? Maybe for the silliest thing, like, I am so grateful that you take out the trash every day. Like, that can really matter to someone. Or maybe there's something you just really haven't spoken that love to that person for. Or in individual groups, hikes with women, I also like to do shouting out something you're proud of. Not your children, not your partner, not your mom, like proud of you. I want to know what you are proud of yourself, like that day and that moment. And sometimes women, like, we don't want to talk about ourselves. I don't know what that is. It's like, oh, like, I shouldn't say that about myself. But yeah, you should, because one, maybe you worked hard for it. Or two, like, you're deserving of that moment for you. And then once you get the first woman to, like, really say something they're proud of for themselves, then it's like, and that energy goes around the circle, and then everybody's pumping everybody up. And there's nothing more profound than a bunch of women at the moment feeling insecure than to all of a sudden, like, be proud of themselves and have the women around them proud of them. And that energy is just, it's so uplifting, and it's really fun to be around.
Wow. How did you find out that you had like the skill and ability to facilitate that? Because that's a very beautiful skill to create that space.
I think going through it myself, I think I can speak on it now because so much of my past was so hard and was so dark and was so hidden because I was ashamed of it, that healing that and learning how to navigate my anxiety and spouts of depression and all of those things and all the reading and taking classes on meditation. And then when I got into mentoring homeless youth and it was seeing my reaction with everyday kids, I was like, oh, okay. Like, maybe I have something here, right? And then you kind of dive into all of those things that you're reading, like, what is your why and what is your superpower? And then having people make comments towards me, or I go on hikes and like I see animals all the time when I hike, and I paid no attention of it until someone hiking with me was like, why is there always this when I'm out with you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then now I was like, oh, right. So like I talk to birds or I talk to animals or I talk to the trees, but that was healing for me. And then once I realized that people don't engage that way that much, but how much they enjoyed it, I was like, let's keep flowing with this and see where it can lead to.
I have like three questions from everything. Yeah, you just go ahead. Said. Okay, bring it on. The first one is, I feel from my own experience and what I know is like that shame is one of the most disabling things that you can have in your life. It could prevent you from doing so much, from expressing, from being yourself, from like just being comfortable in your own body, in your own mind, in your own expression. So like you said that you experienced shame, how did you combat that?
By making a series of really stupid ass horrible choices and then working to fix them, right? I didn't I didn't deeply understand shame until well into my 30s.
So what is shame to you?
Shame is just this internal feeling of I did this and people are going to judge me, or I am disappointing someone, or I'm not being held to my own, like, deep standard within myself. Mm-hmm. And then we don't want to be judged, and we don't want people to think bad about us, right? It's so much of an external validation, because you're lacking something internally, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't even dive deeper into shame until I started reading Dr. Brené Brown books. And if you've never read some of her books, mm-hmm. she does shame study. Like, that's what she studied, was shame and then vulnerability. And she has, like, an entire series of books. And so then starting to read these, it was like, oh my God, I'm not the only mom that's out here, like, freaking out about yeah. what I am doing, and that I'm gonna, like, damage my children mm-hmm. or myself, or I can't afford this, but I need to look a certain way. And so once I realized that the things I was shameful for that I overcame was actually power, it was no longer shame, right? It was, I could have sat in that, but I didn't. And because I overcame it, I became powerful within myself.
Wow. There's always something at the other side of shame.
Right. To look past it, right? Mm-hmm. And to understand that so many people go through these things, right? But I didn't want to talk about those things because no one else around me was going through them. So it was like, okay, no one's going to relate, or I don't want people to look bad at me or bad at my family, right? But it was just my journey.
Yeah.
Right. At the time I didn't understand that. But now it's like, no, I need to go through all of that, and I needed to truly not like myself to then realize how to love myself.
Mm-hmm. Especially because you can understand to those that really face those emotions.
Right. And mm-hmm. so now it's just an openness to, like, be okay and to sit with those things and to know that so many women go through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then once you can lean on other women for that, like, you truly get a sense of a safe space to grow from it. But if you don't feel safe in your space or with your people, then, you know, you internalize it, right? And for me, I internalized it, and then it came out in unhealthy ways, right? Mm-hmm. But I needed that to happen for me to be like, okay, you know, what the fuck? Oh, sorry, question. Okay.
Free expression.
Like, basically, I say the F word a lot. It's like my...
it's your power
word. Yeah. But I had to go there to figure out who the fuck I was.
Yeah.
Like, and that is, you know, that's a beautiful moment for all people.
You did it without... like therapy?
I did therapy forced in high school because of mental health. And then because the way it was forced on me, I kind of was like, I don't want this. And then as I got older, I did a lot of reading, and now I'm a very big advocate for therapy. Mm-hmm. When I was going through being a young mom and postpartum things, I did not have therapy, and you did not talk a lot about those things. And that's unfortunate because moms really need that. And now, yeah, I'm very pro therapy, especially after my sister's passing away. So mm-hmm. I have a grief counselor. My kids, it was non-negotiable. You're going to grief counseling. There are some things that we truly cannot sort out on our own, and that's the beauty of therapy.
What do you think is the most valuable tools you get out of therapy?
You have someone who is completely unbiased in the situation to just fully listen to you. Listening is a learned skill. Like, people hear you, but are they listening to you? And then also in that listening, them picking out cues of things to dive deeper into the question. And then they ask you the deep question. And then you're thinking for yourself, which allows you to almost work through your problem. But you just have someone kind of like guiding you in that direction. They're not telling you what to do. They're just pulling out the right pieces to talk you through it. And then also to give you the tools to kind of manage, like in my situation, grief. How to manage that and what comes with that. And making it normal, for lack of a better word, the feelings that you're experiencing at that time.
It's the unbiased part too,
right? It's just someone that they're not going to judge you for anything.
Yeah.
Right? You get to say all the things that you need to get off your chest, right? Which you can do in prayer and you can do in talking to God or into your higher power. Like, you can do that too. And then therapy is just an added piece to kind of like bring some other tools to the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, the reason why I ask is because like, therapy is very expensive.
It is.
And so I want the people listening that maybe can't afford it to have that awareness. Like, if you can have therapy, then you want a voice that you know is for you and unbiased and just listens. Like, you can find it in friendships until you're at the point where you can afford it. But it's like even hard because with your friends, they're protective or, right, you know, they have it out for you and they're just kind of like, right, giving you false advice.
And there's this beautiful thing that I love to say too, like, so many people have this lovely thing of their unsolicited opinion, which I can even do sometimes, right? Like, you think you're helping, but you're not. Did that person ever ask your opinion of the situation whatsoever, or were they just trying to talk to you about it? Like, your, what they're trying to say might just truly be a space to lose their shit, mm-hmm, and let it all out, and then, you know, have some cheesecake with you and go about your day. Like, mm-hmm, they didn't ask, but then we put that on there, like, oh, we're helping, but that's not actually what they asked for. Like, they were just coming to you to let this out. Like,
yeah,
listen to the people that are talking to you and pay attention if they're actually asking you for what you think or if they're just releasing everything off of them. Because a lot of times that's what helps with therapy or with coaching, is you're just trying to take this heavy burden off of yourself. Like, leave it at the feet of something else, and you don't necessarily want someone's opinion, right?
Yeah.
In that moment. And that's okay. And sometimes when I do that and I say something back, I'll turn to people like, I'm sorry, that was an unsolicited opinion. Like, you don't have to pay attention to what I just said. Like, or you're welcome for my unsolicited opinion. I'm sorry. But that's just to acknowledge, like, oh, crap. Like, you didn't ask me at all about this. You were just trying to talk about what was going on.
I didn't know we could do that. You know, I feel like we're obligated to give advice, like, when you know, oh, you know what, I would do this, so you should, yeah, you know, you express. But you're right, like, I feel like I've done a bad job maybe just listening because I feel like I have so much to say.
Yeah, you can just sit there and, mm-hmm, let the other person talk and not say anything back, and then, you know, then maybe they'll come and talk to you or they'll keep talking. And I do that a lot with my teenage daughter. Just let her keep talking and talking and talking and talking. But that's just because she needs to get it all out there, right? Mm-hmm. And then sometimes she'll be like, okay. And then she'll just like care after her. And I'm sitting there reading a book like I haven't said a damn word. I'm like, do you feel better? And she's like, yes. I'm like, all right.
Oh, my God.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
But it's just being in a space that you feel comfortable to say things to. Mm-hmm. And if you really pay attention also to the people in your lives and what they bring to your lives, you will have those specific people that you do come to for advice in different situations, mm-hmm, or that you do come for the hard truth. And your friend should be able to tell you the hard truth. They should be able to tell you the things you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
And you should, you might not like it in the moment,
yeah,
but you should come back and realize, like, oh, I needed to hear that. Mm-hmm. And that's important. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not good to have someone that just encourages your toxic behavior or your patterns of behavior or, like, your spiraling behavior that, in the end, is that actually being good for that person? Mm-hmm. Or are you just kind of, like, allowing them to spiral?
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but for my female friendships, I feel like it's easier to get into that, like, oh, let's just go crazy. Like, let's go out and, like, have this different kind of not growth-focused dynamic. And I don't really know why that is. I think maybe the feminine expression of just wanting to flow and move and dance. But how did you find, like, your female group of girls where you can be, like, growth-focused?
You know, for me, I am blessed. My best friends today are my best friends I met in my freshman and sophomore year in high school.
What?
Now, we are all very different individuals and we've had very different experiences, and there has been times throughout our lives where maybe we didn't talk to each other as much, and now we're full circle back. But it is really cool to have those individuals where we all do different things. Mm-hmm. And we come from different backgrounds and we've had different experiences. And I also have the girlfriends that I met in college that I'm, you know, I'm very close to this day. And then Victor Jones is, you know, one of my best friends, and I have a couple really close buddies from the military. And one of my buddies that passed away, like, his sister has been very close. So it's really just, I've been blessed to come across these people. And even in our times where we don't talk, or people that I might have been close to, like, some years back, everyone has come to my life at the time in which I needed it. Mm-hmm. And so it's helpful to address that and to know that. And then I think a lot of times in friendships too, it has a lot to do with you. So if you're struggling internally or you're going through something, you can project that onto other people, or you can bring that into your space, right? Like, you're connecting with this person because they make you feel good about the ungood in you, right? Like, you see that in that person. So we can kind of, you know, like, our pain bodies almost connect. Like, oh, I can feel their pain, they can feel my pain. And, like, so we can be in pain together. Mm-hmm. But you want to actually find those people that want you to work through that. And then it's just knowing, like, it's okay to have acquaintances and then be like, no, this actually, like, isn't what I'm looking for now. And that also kind of leads into enhikenment, because it is hard to make new friends.
Yes.
Like, it is so hard. Like, you think it would be easy to, like, say hi to someone, be like, hey, do you want to go get a cup of coffee? Mm-hmm. And it's, like, rehearsing that in my head, like, oh, I can't go ask this person to do that.
So
and
true.
And I'm like, why? Why can't I? What? When you're in kindergarten or first grade or elementary school, like, you are talking to all the kids, yeah. right? And now, then you get into, like, your 20s, your later 30s, and it's, like, I don't know how to make friends. Like, mm-hmm. I still haven't discovered along the path, like, how we lose how to make friends, but it does get harder. And that was another piece that leads into enhikement. It allows women to connect with other women that they may have never met. Mm-hmm. And in just in hiking and talking, you might have similarities, and then it's a safe, free space to be like, oh, let's get together again. And do yeah. this. And so it was also to, like, help people make friends. Like, it mm-hmm. is, it baffles me how hard it is, but it's a real thing. Like, it is hard to make new friends. Mm-hmm. And in today's society too, like, people are just, I think a lot of it has to do too with technology, and yes. everybody's used to, like, social media. So you can talk to someone through a phone, but then you can't have, like, a conversation. Mm-hmm. And conversating with people is just so healthy and so uplifting.
Yeah.
But we do it mm-hmm. like on a phone. Mm-hmm. So then doing that in person becomes scary.
Yeah.
So why not create a space where it just you're naturally doing it, because you're naturally with someone and participating in an event where then you can keep talking and going outside of that.
That is the solution, really. Like, yeah. like, even with this podcast, it's so healing for me because I get to connect. I get to talk to someone and I get to meet, like, amazing people. But what I want is for people, the majority, to have a space where they can be, like, not influenced by technology, not influenced by substance, and be like, want better for each other. Where's that space, you know?
Right.
It really seems like it's church, but when I go to church, I go and I leave.
Right. And a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's what enhikenment is
yeah.
for women. Like, we're going to test your limits and we're going to make you feel uncomfortable. But in that uncomfortable, like, moment, you get to learn about yourself mm-hmm. a lot. Like, I am not taking you on a flat hike. Like, that is walking to me, which is still just as wonderful. But there's going to be hills, you know, and there's going to be challenges in it. And the point of that is there is so much more to us than a lot of times we allow ourselves to become. Mm-hmm. And the best way I know how to show someone that is to put you in a difficult situation or in something that is challenging and watch you work through it. Like, dang. One of my favorite hikes that I'm actually doing next month is, it's kind of flat and it goes down first, right? It's a total of about 3.5 miles max. But to get back, you must go up, mm-hmm. right? And in that, being at the very bottom, to have to see the top, then all of a sudden, that's when everything starts working in your mind. I can't do this. Wait, this is way too hard. Like, yeah. this is up here. And then it's like, okay, no, we're going to walk back through that because you can. You have no option. There's no helicopter coming for you. Okay, we're, like, right here in the foothills. Mm-hmm. No one's coming. But you can get there. But you have to do it. And you have to do it one step at a time. And then you have to face those fiery thoughts in your head that you can't do it, right? And maybe we go slow. Like, maybe it's me behind you being like, fuck, yes, we're going. Take a deep breath, yes. right? And in that, you learn breath control. And by controlling your breath, you control your heart rate. And when your heart rate is calm, your mind is calm, and it's like, okay, yes, I can. So then I get to watch you at the bottom think you can't, to like stepping in the parking lot that you can, and it's like, all right, yes. Like, you are this extraordinary being. You just had to be outside of your limit to understand that. And I think that is really found in hiking, is you get to be uncomfortable to then be comfortable in who you are, mm-hmm. in realizing you're much stronger than you give yourself credit for.
Wow.
Yeah. I love that in women. I get so pumped when I see women do things that they don't think they can do. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm like, oh, you fucking can. Let's yeah. go. Like, let's go. And it doesn't have to be hiking. It can be in anything. Mm-hmm. I just, my space is hiking.
Yeah.
And I love it so much. And I see what it does for women. Mm-hmm. So I want people to experience that.
Yeah, I felt that feeling when I had one of my friends do ice bath. Yeah. So I just watched my friend who, like, did not have interest in doing the ice bath. And I was like, but you're going to want to. You're going to think about it later. You're going to be the only one here that did it. And she did it. And to see her go in there and be like, you can do it. See, you're just sitting there. It's going to be done soon. And to see her, like, have that pain and then come out and just be like, ah, I'm glad I did it. It's yeah. cool to see, like, someone press through a challenge and realize, I just accomplished a challenge. I feel great.
Yes. And that's the whole journey with, you know, with mental health and spiritual health and your nutrition is, like, you have to go through it, right? And we live in a quick fix society, right? Mm-hmm. Everything's, because of technology, everything's at your fingertips.
Yes.
But that is just reading something. And that is just seeing something. Like, you actually have to put in the work to get the results of what you just Googled. You know, it takes time. And it takes being uncomfortable. And it takes doing it wrong and finding out what works for you. And at the end of the day, like, real nutrition and just solid health choices day by day is the way to a healthy life. There is no quick fix. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not real. And in all reality, do you want the quick fix? Because what does that do for you? It's nothing, in my opinion, anyhow. Like, I think going through the suffering and the figuring out what works for you and what didn't work for you brings you to a higher level. Mm-hmm. Is the suffering part of it fun? No. Mm-hmm. But it's there for a purpose. And if you go courageously into the purpose and you sit with it and you grow through the shit, like, you really come out on the other side of it. But you have to go through it. And that part sucks. And there's no nice way to say that to someone other than it's going to be hard. But if you're in an unhealthy state of being, like, that was a collective of choices. That didn't happen overnight either. Like, maybe it was one big traumatic event right then and there. But if you're 3 months from that, you have mm-hmm. continued to choose to be where you are. Mm-hmm. So you can choose to stay or you can choose not, right? It's all in a choice. Mm-hmm. But you have to, you know, you really have to courageously face all the shit that comes with it.
Yeah. How long did you stay in your sad window?
It kind of, like, was like ebbs and flows of things, uh-huh. right? really rough depression in high school and into the start of college, and kind of battling what I wanted to do versus what my parents wanted me to do, and mm-hmm. how do you separate that? And then when I finally separated that and I made the decision, and I'm like, when I moved and I was taking care of myself, you know, then I got pregnant.
When you moved to, you were in San Jose, then you moved to San Diego.
Yes, for college. Mm-hmm. And we, it's funny because I just wanted to move out. Like, I had no desire to go to college. Like, because college was being in a business program. And that's not what I wanted to do at the time with my life. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to go into, like, arts or culinary. But I went to move out. And with that came choices. And I had to pay a lot of my own way. And so working in school just didn't work. And the reason it didn't work for me is because I wasn't taking classes that I wanted to take. I wasn't doing something I wanted to do. So I've had no freaking business calculus. Like, cool, I passed it. Like, I hated it. Like, why was I even there? Right? It wasn't, didn't do anything mm-hmm. for me. Which for other people, like, pump, like, they're great at it. Me, it was like pulling teeth. Like, I just didn't want to be there. And then when I had to work to survive and to pay rent, and so it just wasn't there. Like, something had to give, and, well, school gave, because school did not pay my rent, right? Mm-hmm. My jobs paid my rent mm-hmm. and fed me.
Yeah.
And put gas in my car, which is funny because I ran out of gas on the freeway.
Really?
Yeah, I did. When I was, I ran out of gas on the freeway. I just got paid. I worked at the Gap, and I just got paid, and I was trying to get back to the dorms to cash my check to have gas money. Aww. and I ran out of gas. So I actually, my niece, her first birthday present was like an oh shit box, and it's envelopes of cash from all the shit moments, and I have them for my kids from when I was college. Like, I ran out of gas on the freeway, right? So it's like cash in that. Like, oh, I drank too much at a party, I had to figure out my way home, right? Like, a note to make you feel good about yourself, like those kind of things, because it was like I had to figure those out on my own, which running out of gas on the freeway is just,
you have to like go get the red container, right?
Yeah, I had to call one of the girls from the dorm. I was one of the only people with a car, and wow. So they had to borrow someone's car, get a container of gas, and we had to put it my car. And when, you know, it's funny now, but when you're 18 and you're on the side of the freeway, it is not funny.
It's scary. You're like, I don't know where to go.
Like, it is not funny. And I'm not calling home. Like, I'm not calling home. Be like, oh, I ran to get a gas. Like, that was the last thing I wanted to do, because that was saying that I couldn't, like, I was trying to prove that I could do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And so that was like, nope, mm-hmm. not going to do that one. That one's funny.
it's good. I hope that never happens to me.
And so now, like, to this day, like, if I see the car even at, like, a quarter tank of gas, I'm like, we need to put gas in the car.
I learned. Oh, my gosh.
I'm not going to go through that again, yeah. Which, if it happens, it happens. And I guess, like, the best way to approach it is kind of, it's a good learning lesson, yeah. Right?
If you have to learn,
avoid but it. If you don't have to, just put gas in your car. Like, yeah. It's helpful. But I was broke, right? And so I needed that check. I had nothing to my name. And so I needed that check to get gas. Mm-hmm. And back then, there was no direct deposit. Okay, like, it was paper checks. You had to get your check and go to the ATM and deposit your check and get cash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old were you when you had a savings, when you first started your savings?
When I moved to school, yeah. So when I was 18, I opened my – no, that's a lie. I'm sorry. I think that's when I became really aware of money, because I was on my own. But I started working in high school at, like, 16, and I had a bank account. But there was no understanding of, like, savings. It was just to have money to buy things, right? Yeah. It really wasn't, I think, as far as, like – saving and understanding a budget until it was, you know, I'm 18 and I have to pay for things.
Yeah.
And then it's very different on how you budget and what you save for and what you prepare for. And then kids came into the story and it was like, oh my God, like, how do you pay for things when you can barely pay your rent? And so it's working through those things. And it's so funny because I would never want to go back to my early 20s because this because the struggle was so hard. But I am so grateful for all of those things, you mm-hmm. know, like I can't even think of the amount of times my PG&E got shut off and I had two kids, really? Right? Like I couldn't pay it.
Where did you live when you had your kids?
I had my daughter in San Francisco. Like I gave birth to her in San Francisco and then I moved back to San Jose. Mm-hmm. And then I had my son in San Jose. But yeah, I only lived after I gave my daughter because she was premature. And what I had when she was pregnant, I had what was called vasa previa. So at a very high risk pregnancy, to make it sound, the simplest way to say it is basically it's one of the baby's like cords or blood vessels goes across the mother's cervix. Whoa. If you go into labor, it bursts and you will have a stillborn child. Your baby will bleed. They will not survive. There is a very slim survival rate of women who go undiagnosed and have birth because it bursts that blood vessel.
Oh my gosh.
So I found out about that. And so I was on partial bed rest and then I was on bed rest. And so I couldn't leave my tiny ass little place in San Francisco. But it was wonderful to be at UCSF going through that. But you know, now when I look back on it, like, fuck, like I was 23, he was 21. Like I'm being told I have to do all these things or the baby won't survive. And then it's, you're going to have to be on bed rest and you can't be alone. And we're going to take her, you know, we were pushing for 35 weeks. I ended up having her right before 34 because I had some bleeding. They gave me steroid injections to help advance her lungs, and then I had a little bit of bleeding. See, another good story. He was at the Giants game. Like, his aunt came in town. Like, I could not be by myself. So his aunt came in town, wanted to take him to a baseball game. So his cousin, she stayed with me. She's like, I'll hang out with Carrie.
Oh my gosh.
So they went and they had a great time. Like, he was barely 21 years old, right? So like, having a good time.
Yeah.
Comes back, it'd been like an hour and I had some bleeding and I knew I could not bleed. So I was like, what's happening? Because
when you're pregnant for those 9 months, you're not bleeding at all.
No. Okay. I mean, you can have spotting and that's natural. But for me, I could not go into labor, right? So the spotting, we needed to make sure it was not an indication that I was in an early form of labor and my water broke. Because if my water broke, it would have burst the blood vessel. So I'm guessing in like the panic of waking him up, like sobriety kicked in. And we did not live that far from UCSF and we got there in like a quickness. But then I am arguing with a nurse that they cannot give me a pelvic exam because I can't have anything inserted again because the blood vessel's there. And we're trying to get my OBGYN on the phone. And so it's like this huge scene. Right. And then finally we get her on the phone and then she's yelling at the nurse for not listening to me on the fact that you cannot give me a pelvic exam.
Oh, my gosh.
Because the nurse had no idea what I had. And that's okay. But it was like really a lot. And then I was on hospital bed rest. And the next day, like her heart rate dipped. And so it was emergency C-section. And so she came right shy of 34 weeks. And I had to have a C-section. And she wasn't breathing when she was born. And then she was breathing. And then she was in the NICU for 7-8 days.
What were those 3 days like for you when you got in the hospital and just the things that you were going through, the birth, and then finding out that she wasn't breathing?
It's honestly, it was just so much at once, and it's overwhelming to be in that situation and to try to like navigate it. So I think a lot of that was just like fight or flight. So in that time, it was just all about like, I have to make it through it, right? Like, she has to be okay. And then it's when you have a baby in the NICU, like, your baby's not there with you. Like, mm-hmm. you're having to go see the baby. So it's a very different experience. You know, at first, like, she could not come out of the incubator. So, you know, it's touching her through holes in glass. And then she could come out, and it was a lot of skin on skin. And it's seeing all these tiny, frail little babies. Mm-hmm. And, like, Madison was barely 4 pounds, and she was the big baby in the NICU, Whoa. Right? And that was just, like, it's heartbreaking to, like, see parents in there, or to see the babies that whose parents at the time, like, for whatever situation they're in, couldn't be in there at the mm-hmm. same time. And those nurses are they're cut from a different cloth. And then getting through that, and you have to go home and you don't have your baby, right? Mm-hmm. And that's another piece of, like, thinking that people were judging me, because I was young, I did look young, clearly was pregnant, and then I'm leaving without a baby, mm. right? And I had to see her going back and forth while recovering from a C-section to get to spend time with her in the hospital until she got home.
Oh, my gosh. And you were still in school.
No, I stopped school when I found out I was pregnant and I had vasa brevia. I was working at a law firm at night. I was going to culinary school. I'm sorry. I was working full-time during the day. I was going to culinary school at night. And then when I found out I had vasa brevia and that I would be being put on bed rest, it was like, it was impossible. Like, I was able to extend notes out to keep working. Like, I could not afford to be on bed rest. Like, it wasn't going to happen. I mean, even when I had my daughter, I quote unquote on paper made too much to get WIC, but disability did not cover just basic rent and food, but I couldn't get any assistance in that. And that was a really difficult thing for me, because I was like, wait, so I, like, worked really hard and I can't get help, but I have a high needs baby. Like, we're going to pediatric cardiologist because her heart was underdeveloped for being born early. Mm. But I can't get some help with formulas or diapers. And back then, preemie diapers were not in stores. I had to order it. So not only did I have to pay more to find them, but then I had to pay to ship them to me. Like,
oh my god.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can get preemie diapers in store now, but back then, which to me is not even that long ago, my daughter's like 16, but mm-hmm. you couldn't get them in stores. Like, preemie clothes were not in stores. Like, I bought dolls at garage sales to have clothes for my child, or my aunt found a little store in Vacaville where the nurses in the NICU had different church groups that would make clothes and send you home with clothes so you would have something for them. And so it's just it's a hard experience when you're young and you don't have anybody going through it. And my friends were there, but they weren't. They were in different parts of their lives. And that makes sense. Like, we're 23, mm-hmm. right? We were just in different spaces. Mm-hmm. So it did feel very alone.
He wasn't with you then?
Oh, no, that was there. He's still there. So he was there, but it's just, as a woman, like, I just felt alone mm-hmm. because I didn't really even know what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And it was just struggling financially. And I have, and I still am, like, the main earner. So when I was not that and I was trying to rely on him, like, it made me uncomfortable because I had so many years of relying on myself and knowing, like, I had to take care of me. Then I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't because I'm on disability.
Mm-hmm. And you can't work on disability, huh?
No. I mean, not with, like, a paper check. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had your own business and that sort of thing, it could be a different situation.
Isn't that so flawed?
The whole system is flawed, in my opinion. The whole system, most definitely. But, like, we don't help women and mothers the way that we should.
Yeah.
And so it does make it makes it difficult. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and those are things that I'm more open to talk about it now, but I didn't talk about it because it's hard. Like, it's hard to say, like, you had to steal to survive. It's, like I just said, my PG&E went out. Like, I came out and my car had got repossessed. Like, those are not fun things to talk about, but that's just what happened. Like, it was hard. It's the Bay Area. It's expensive. And you're trying to raise one little human, and then you got two little humans, and it's all those things that become difficult.
So I think, like, bad things and challenges in life that where you're at rock bottom are so valuable for the reason of, like, compassion. Yeah. And being like, oh my gosh, I did not know what it was like to feel this low. And so when you see others in their struggle, you, like, you don't judge them, but you feel for them. You feel that pain, and, like, there's just this different kind of love, and, like, I feel you. Because until you get there, you are going to be a spectator. You are going to be, why are you doing that?
Right.
Especially different lifestyles or going to a different city, a different country, where you see what they do there to survive. You'll be like, oh, I would never. Right. Have you ever been at the point where you need to survive?
Yeah. And that actually brings to one of, like, in working with homeless youth or whatever, that to survive, right? One of the biggest things that I would try to get across is that you say that you would not do that, or you would not be in that space if you were homeless, but have you ever been homeless? No, you haven't. So you actually don't know. You don't know what you would do until you truly have to survive. And then what comes out of you is a whole different kind of person, right? And I think that is where, when we serve other people and we help other people, or like you said, when you hit your rock bottom and you really are in the shit, a lot of times those people and individuals that have been through so much are the people, like, truly willing to give. Because you felt in those moments that you didn't have anybody to help you. And I don't ever want people to feel like that. To some degree, you must, in fact, help yourself. But knowing there's someone that believes in you and that you can lean on when needed is essential when you feel like you can't. And that's, you know, that's me giving back, because I just don't want anyone to ever truly feel like they can't. Because you can. Like, you really can.
Yeah. What did you learn from volunteering with the youth?
Just one, man, how much we need to love other people and how we need to be aware in what goes on in our own communities, and just how much showing up for someone makes a difference, right? When you say you're going to do something, do it, right? And that was really big for those kids, right? Because their lives were a background of people not doing what they were saying, or unstable or unhealthy at the time. So being able to show up for them and support them, and also just get a sense of awareness of what was going on. And it was good for people to experience that. You need to see what's going on in your community. You really do. To know what's there, to know what's being done, to make a difference. And those kids, I shouldn't say kids, some of them are youth, man, they're resilient. Like, you have to be so resilient to be on the streets or to be in a really, like, violent or toxic home, right? And wanting them to see that within themselves, like, they have a piece of them that, growing up in a very sheltered, loving home, like, you don't have it the same that they did, right? And they can take that tenacity, and they can take that resilience, and they can really put it towards something of good for them. But they were so used to seeing it and something unreliable and toxic and falling into a system and trying to be with friends. So really just wanting for them to do better. And it also allows you with volunteering, like, the people that volunteer at Stand Up for Kids, one, nobody's paid. So
where is this called?
Stand Up for Kids is in Silicon Valley. Actually, right in San Jose. They have chapters all over the nation, but I volunteered at the Silicon Valley chapter, which is mainly San Jose. Mm-hmm. But nobody's paid, including the executive director. Like, those people are, we show up because we want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And that is just like, those are the best of the best of kind of people out there. Like, you are putting yourself in these situations and you are giving your time willingly to make a difference in somebody else's life. And if we had more people doing that, like, just imagine how we can change our communities mm-hmm. and the energy that we have out in the world. Mm-hmm. If you just showed up to help, just because, mm-hmm. like, just to know that you're helping someone have a better day. And maybe I only helped you that day, but I still helped you that day.
Yeah.
And in reality, we are in the here and the now, in the present. So that day does matter.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And it's like, people don't really know how they can help, you know? And that's the thing. I've never heard of this organization before. And I've been in Morgan Hill, San Jose my whole life.
Yeah.
It's, we'll probably have to tag all those resources where people can do those volunteering and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've found it on an off chance. Like, most people had never heard of it. Most people don't really realize the number of homeless youth, like, mm-hmm. out in society. Mm-hmm. And they look at adult homelessness the same way they do youth homelessness, and they're very different things. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it is an issue, and we need to do better for people. And for me, it just all really comes back to, like, we have to do better for people.
Mm-hmm. And that makes us better.
Yes.
Like depression for people that have it all, it's a different kind of struggle than someone that has nothing.
Right.
And the weird thing is, to connect would make you realize, like, you're okay.
Yeah.
You have the ability to help someone, or someone has it worse than you, or someone has it better than you, and they're still not okay. It could do a lot for
those. It humanizes it. We are human, yeah. Right? So these struggles, you know, and people in different, like, economic situations, like, they experience things differently. But mental health has no bias, right? Mm. It yes. targets, no matter what you look like, no matter what's in your bank account, like, it does not give a shit,
yeah.
Right? It targets everyone. So knowing that, you know, that it is something that can affect everyone, mm-hmm. and can affect us all in different phases of our lives, and just knowing that you're just human, mm-hmm. and there are resources and there are people that you can lean on, and there's nothing wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not feeling good in that moment and you should address it. But that doesn't make something inherently wrong with you,
mm-hmm.
whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, you get to take that and you get to use it as a power.
Yeah.
And you get to use it to fuel you, and then in turn help someone else. Like, yeah. Complete the circle.
Yeah. And I like how you said that, like, we are human, and to understand that we should have a problem with how we are existing on a crazy planet. And yes. It's okay to have, what am I supposed to do on this earth? And then for you, you got to volunteer and realize that you have a gift of helping people, and you got to create your career, which is linked to your purpose.
Right.
And that's what we need to, like, see these injustices that we feel. Cause, like, that's like how I kind of see it sometimes, is you're so disgusted with an injustice in your life that you can actually bring life into that, and that could be, like, something that brings healing to your journey. But sometimes we just stay in that disgust, in that ick, and yeah. then it gets into our soul.
Well, it's what you know, right? You have made friends with your darkness at that point in time, almost, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've been sitting in it for so long, you're used to it, right? And it's the same with all other habits. Like, we're used to doing these things. It is easier to be in that space than to face the discomfort of coming out of it. And that's where a lot of people struggle, right? Is you already don't feel good. And that can be mental health, physical health, spiritual health. Like, it's already deep down in there, but at least you're used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's easy, you know, to say, like, oh, well, like, feeling sad, like, I'm used to feeling sad. right? You put that in your head versus facing going through it so you don't feel sad because it feels uncomfortable. And who the hell wants to feel uncomfortable? Nobody.
Yeah.
But you have to. Mm-hmm. Like, if you genuinely want to change it, you have to start with you and you have to face the discomfort. Mm-hmm. And it leads to so many beautiful things, not just for you, but for the people around you.
Mm-hmm. And your business is geared towards mental health.
So in Heikkenman is like mind, body, spirit, health. Mm-hmm. So it's the whole goal for women to be truly healthy. And we start with that, with the way you talk to yourself and the way you fuel yourself. Mm-hmm. And usually those two are combined, right? So a lot of times when I want to know how you talk to yourself before you eat, while you eat, and after you eat. And that's truly because so I can understand your relationship with food, one, and two, how you talk to yourself. If you beat yourself up every single time you have a cookie, like, we're going to be starting there. I'm not going to start on like why you want to weigh a certain weight or what you want to do. I want to know why you beat yourself up for what you are eating. Like, something else is going on in there. And until we fix what's going on in there, you're not going to create the healthy habits to let it manifest to like the external being. Because a lot of times people look at the physical as their goal.
Mm-hmm.
But if in getting there, your mindset is so negative and you bag on yourself all the time and you don't nourish your body or you don't eat enough, like, you're not really healthy. And you're not doing yourself a justice. And even when you hit that physical being look in the mirror, you're not going to feel what you think you're going to feel. It's going to be a false sense of reality.
Very true.
And I want you to be healthy. Like, I want you to truly be healthy. I don't give a shit what your physical being looks like. Like, I want it to be healthy internally. Like, I want you to talk to yourself nicely. Or catch yourself when you don't. Mm-hmm. You're not going to talk to yourself nicely every day. But when it happens, like, how do I work myself out of it? Mm-hmm. And I find that being out in nature just creates an easier space for people to do it naturally. Like, you naturally become more peaceful. Mm-hmm. So you talk to yourself a little bit nicer. And then we can talk about how to fuel yourself. And go through things like that. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it starts with like mental, but I really believe that health does start with like your mental and your spiritual being.
Yeah.
And all of the rest of that follows. Mm-hmm. When you feel good about yourself, you make good choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you feel shitty, you make shitty choices and then you make an excuse for it and then you play the victim of your own choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your relationship with anything, like that conversation you have with yourself, you're right, it's nothing is physical, it's all just a reflection of the inside.
Yeah.
It's all spiritual, energetic. And you even see that at the gym, like the people that look the rippest, and then you connect with them and you're like, you actually have a really bad relationship with fitness. Your worth is all in that. If you skip a workout, you don't feel like you could love yourself.
Yeah. And that's where I really just want people to understand, like, it really starts in here. And then you go through all of that. And the physical things in which I challenge myself to do are actually related to knowing what I can do and being able to work through how I feel when I'm doing it. Like, I purposefully put myself in situations that are hard and that are of discomfort in a physical aspect to know what I can do.
Yeah.
And then to be able to work through it and then hopefully be able to show someone that something is possible. Like, I am an athlete now and I have to remind myself that, but I don't look at myself as an athlete. But I've done these marathons, half Ironman.
That's crazy.
You know, I compete in powerlifting. And right now I am competing in powerlifting and I'm training for an ultra marathon. And all that is for me is I am getting older and I want to know what I'm capable of. I want to know what I'm capable of. And I want my children to see that you can do hard things And just because I'm your mom and I am a mom doesn't mean that my life stops. And that doesn't mean that I don't get to have new experiences. Like, mm-hmm. I want them to see that. So should they choose to have a partnership later in life and build a family that then they support their partner, or they have that for themselves, that they don't lose their identity because they're in a relationship or because they came parents, you know, that you get to still do things.
Wow. That's huge. And your kids will appreciate that. Even if you're a little bit more busy, they could see, dang, like, my life wasn't an inconvenience to her where she can't be herself anymore.
Right. And to understand that you manage your time. And then so when you are giving your time to someone and you are fully giving your time, like, it truly means that much more, right? Because I carve out everything throughout my day so I can manage all of these things, you know, and that goes within hikingment. Like, you can do all these things, you just have to make the time for them, right? And so lead by example. We all have the same fucking 24 hours in a day. Mm-hmm. It's the same. What are you going to use with them? What are you going to do with them? Like, you get today, that's it. Tomorrow's over with, and you have no idea if you get tomorrow. Like, you get today. So, like, live it. Like, do things and enjoy them and give back, so that should you be so blessed to have tomorrow, like, you rise up even more and you get to keep, like, rising up in those moments. And I want my children to do that for themselves also. I just don't ever want anyone to lose themselves because they became a parent. And I lost myself so much in the beginning. So to then discover myself, like, it is a big deal. And so many moms go through that. And, you know, that circles back to enhancement. Like, I don't want moms to feel like they don't have a space and they don't get to, like, put their genuine health first. And that can be a continual controversial topic of, like, oh, you got to put your kids first. And I'm like, well, actually, my kids are my why, so I'm putting myself first. Because if I'm putting the food on the table and the roof over their head without me, how am I putting them first? I'm actually not. Like, the best thing I can do for my children is to take care of myself and to love myself and to be healthy and to have a spiritual grounding and to show them it's okay to not be okay, but then you must do something about it. You don't get to give yourself a fucking pity party. Or do, go ahead, have the pity party and then do something about it.
Yeah.
And kids need to see that. They need to see suffering to understand that everybody suffers, but you have a choice in what you do with that suffering. And I think it's good that my kids get to see all the things, right? And the ups and downs and the ebbs and flows and the vulnerability that comes with it. So they can be better humans, you know? Like, that was kind of one of my biggest things, like, Dad and I, is just the, like, we don't want to raise little assholes. Like, I really don't. And, like, that would be my biggest thing. Like, if my child's ever an asshole, please tell me, because we're going to talk about it. Because that is not what I'm going to put out to the world. Like, I want them to be genuine, living in service human beings.
And it shows a lot of what you want for others, too. Yeah. Just like your message of being of service to each other and helping each other.
Yeah. I don't, like, believe it or not, so, because I have a full-time career and I have in hikingment, and I do coaching, but I do the free hikes, and a lot of my initial coaching, like, I'm not making any money. I spend more money on in hikingment than I make money on in hikingment, and I don't give a fuck because I love it. And I want people to experience that. And a lot of times people need to understand, like, your passion doesn't necessarily have to come with a big income at first. Like, in time, it can come to that. But I have a real understanding of, like, I do have to provide for my family. That is what it is. And I willingly go into that. But I love doing this, and I love helping people, and I love people hiking. And so, like, I just do it to do it. Mm-hmm. It's great.
That's amazing.
And it's like, how lucky am I that I get to see people go through these experiences and I get them to like do more miles and find what they're capable of. And like, I find out that people like haven't been even been to parks in our own area. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, what is happening? Like, it's right there. Like, just go.
When's your next one?
March is my next free hike, March 18th. And it's at Sierra Vista Open Space Preserve.
Mm. Is that in San Jose?
In San Jose. That's not that. Yeah. But I have people that have never been to Yosemite that are California residents and think that's a travesty. And if you're listening to this, you need to go to Yosemite. But you know, we're going to Pinnacles National Park this weekend. That's over by Hollister. Like, it is a national park right here, not that far. Mm-hmm. And it's transformative. Like, you're driving through, like, you have to pass this way. And then there's Gilroy. And then there's Hollister. And then there's these huge, beautiful red rocks out of nowhere. Like, you can't explain that shit unless you see it. And then you get to be engulfed in it.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful. They have caves that you get to go through. And I just, man, I love parks. And like, I just really do. And when I just love seeing how people react to being in it.
Yeah.
It's like, yes.
I want to see that. I want to do that. But again, I like to do things when I can. And oftentimes I'm like, oh, I should not go there alone. I don't want to like go through all this pain. And I don't know what path to take. I always get lost. And so like, that's really cool that you're creating even the ability to know how to hike if you do it on your own time.
Or send me a message. And a lot of times I haven't been on a trail, but I use maps all the time. And I will look it up and I'll break it down to you, or I'll tell you like where to look to read up on something, what you need for a day hiker, how many miles is it going to be, and when was the last time that you exercised. And these are just things that you can ask me or message me and like we'll have a conversation on it. Or if I have the time, we'll be like, hey, you know what, I'm free on this day, like we'll go hike it together. Or amazing. I'll go walk it, you know, with you, because I want you to go out and try it. And me becoming a better hiker is I had buddies that were backpackers and hikers, and like my buddy Travis just started freaking taking me up in Yosemite, and then Caleb was taking us on like overnights, and the next thing I know, it's like me, my other half, Caleb, Travis, and I'm the only girl, and I'm hiking the highest summit in the continental U.S. with like this big ass pack on my back. Like, the stairs were taller than my fucking knees, right?
This is in Yosemite.
No, this is Mount Whitney. So okay. It's like it's out that way. But it's just like having someone that took the time to take me. And so when you have that, or you have access to that, and it's just getting the word out there, like you say, like people don't know. Mm-hmm. But all it takes is one person to spend a little bit of extra time and show you where to go. Mm-hmm. And to feel comfortable to ask the questions. And I want people to feel like it doesn't bother me. Ask me anytime. Like, if I don't respond right away, it's probably because I'm at work or kids or training. But I will respond to you and try to help you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to want to close, like, around now. And we're going to do a part 2 with your story.
Oh, okay.
So we can, like, dive deep into that. But can I leave the invitation for people listening, kind of how you did for me right now, but like to reach out to you as far as these nature hikes or coaching or like pretty much what you do?
So, and Hike and Mint is on Instagram and Facebook. I'll be honest, I'm not the best at checking Facebook. So I would go within Hike and Mint. But then my link tree is on there too, which will show free monthly hikes. So it's up through March, and then April and May will be up in the coming weeks. Or you just shoot me a message and my email's there. And I'd be more than happy to. If you're interested in coaching, then yes, you would message me and we dive into a much more deeper conversation. Because it's important to me to make sure that I am the right coach for you. And I think a lot of times people don't spend enough time maybe doing that. What I do may not be for everybody, and I do not want to waste your time or your services, like, because it might not resonate with you. And I know myself enough to know that it's okay to know that I might not be the best fit for you, but mm-hmm. I might be able to recommend something, you know. Mm-hmm. I do mind, body, spirit work.
To so talk it's not your only health. Health, it's mental.
Yes. And
coaching of life.
It's coaching of life. So we're going to talk about your nutrition. Like, meditation is going to be a part of what we do. Like, mm-hmm. there it is. Like, you can call it prayer. You can call it meditation. But silence is a part of it. And then it's getting out and exercising via hikes. Wow. That is what I do. So if you're someone that really wants to just, like, tackle the weight loss thing, like, I will work with you with that. If you're looking for, like, more gym-based, like, that whole physical thing, I'm going to recommend you to people. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't think that I could, but that's not my niche, and I want you to excel and succeed in what you want to do. So I'm going to refer you over to, like, some trainers mm-hmm. That I know. The only athletes that I have are endurance, so running or Ironman.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool because – I know a bunch of strength people. I have never met an endurance coach before.
So I, when it comes to athletic coaching, it is strictly endurance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is because then we loop in hiking. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's miles and what you put on your body. But I don't do, like, while I strength train and I power lift, I have a coach. And if, like, someone wanted to do that, I would refer you to my coach, kind of thing, you know? Like, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, hitting me up on Instagram is, like, mm-hmm. the best way. And then I'll probably just give you my cell phone number so you can reach me faster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I've loved about, like, creating this podcast of just, it's people to people. Like, yes, you're hearing this on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Instagram, whatever, but this is a real person. If a part of her story made you like, oh my gosh, I never knew someone could relate to me like that, then have that conversation.
Yeah.
So much healing.
A lot of my first times when I'm working with a client is we're going on a hike, and that's what we're so gonna do. Cool. And we're gonna talk it out, and that's because I'm in my best space there, and for me to truly help you, I must be in my best space and in my best environment. Mm-hmm. And that is outside in nature on a trail.
That's so you could do a coaching session like
that's what that's what it was. So a lot of my clients, we met once or twice a week, mm-hmm. but it was hiking. So we're talking through things as we're hiking. So we're doing all the things right there. We're working on your mental health. We're talking through your emotional issues. We're building your cardiovascular health because you're talking and you're going up a hill. So you're also trying to breathe at the same time, right? Dang. We're tackling all the things. So when you leave that hike, like, you are such in a fuck yeah place to tackle the next day. And we're gonna do it again.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, guys, take advantage of your resources. Yeah. That would be really cool. And healing, a unique kind of healing that's very necessary.
Yeah.
Especially when sitting down and talking about your problems or your goals, you can just feel so much, like, pressure. But to move and be in nature, that's why you do it. But it's beautiful. I really love it.
It's my take on, mind, body, spirit, health, mm-hmm. and what I really want people to experience.
Mm-hmm. All right, so my last question for you is, of course, this podcast is about elevating. So what is your message with what you're feeling right now, the times we're in, on how someone can elevate their life?
I think for, truly elevating your life, you start where you are, you own it, mm-hmm. you accept it, and you boldly make the decision to rise. And each and every day, you do something that betters you from the day before. You make the conscious effort and decision to be better than the you were the mm-hmm. day before. Mm. And you go in. And you go in, like, balls to the wall, full force for you. And by doing that, you put out a different kind of energy out into the world. You want to change the world, change yourself, and watch just how it manifests out into everything else.
Dang, that's empowering.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
It's so cool meeting you.
I know, like, I'm so pumped.
Yeah, and I'm going to come on your hikes and just, like, we're going to stay connected for sure.
And then you can see how I am out in that. Like, everybody is themselves, but we talk or react differently in different environments. Yeah. And, like, when you're in your thing, like, so much comes out of you. And I love it.
I'm gonna see that. Well, we are going to have a part two, because there is just so many things to discuss. And especially because you're very, like, you have been marinating in your story and your expression. You have so many messages to share. So I want to get you on again soon, for part two. Until then, guys, thank you for listening. Keep elevating your life, and have a beautiful and lovely day. Thank you.
Thank you.